Grocers, though we have fun, tax collectors getting closer, still we have fun. There's nothing surer, the rich get rich and the poor get poorer. In the meantime, in between time, ain't we got fun?
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Ruscio, who is a professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. His books include Economic Representations, Both Academic and Everyday Postmodern Moments in Modern Economics, Rethinking Planning, Development, Globalization Essays in Marxian Class Analysis, and his forthcoming book is Mind the Gap. His occasional links and commentary are available at anticap.wordpress.com. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Ruscio.
It's good to be back with you, Ian.
So this study that Emmanuel Seiss and Thomas Piketty came out with just last week, it certainly seems to have gotten some notice. I noticed that Joseph Stiglitz, speaking at the AFL-CIO convention in Los Angeles last week, talked in terms of this study and went on to say that the hardworking and rule-abiding have seen their paycheck shrink or stay the same while the rule-breakers raked in huge profits and wealth. It made our economy sick and our politics sick too. So you've done some very graphic examples showing how showing the data and the effect of this data. When are the American people going to wake up and take to the streets?
Well, they, as you know, they already have. It is appropriate that today we're talking about the problem of inequality, what I think we should only characterize as obscene levels of inequality. On the fifth anniversary of the meltdown of the investment bank Lehman Brothers, after which the world economy, not only the U.S. economy, but the world economy was brought to its knees, and we're coming up on the second anniversary of Occupy Wall Street, right? The movement in the United States that, if it did nothing else, put the issue of inequality on the U.S. political map. When the Zuccotti Park protesters said that we are the 99%, that's exactly what they were pointing to. They were pointing to the issue of inequality, economic inequality, social inequality, and political inequality.
But this latest economic data, which indicates that we are worse off now in this new gilded age than we ever have been before since in the last century, since statistics were kept, we're the top 10%. Of the United States earns half of the total income of the United States, so we're not just an economy of the 1%. We know that since the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling, we've also become a government of the 1%.
Right. The Piketty and Sayers study, which is actually an updated version of a study that they've been carrying out for a number of years now, and they deserve a lot of credit for it. It's very, very good work. Indicates to us that, in some sense, we're back to where we started, which was a bad situation. So the situation today, or as it actually in terms of the data that we have, 2012, is in broad strokes, comparable to where things were in 2007, just before the crash, which itself was comparable to where things were in 1929, just before the crash that set off the first Great Depression. So those are the links that we want to make. And one of the wonderful things about Piketty and Sayers is the data that they are using, in fact, cover a long period of time, back to 1917. And so we can now make these comparisons based on the work that they've done. Back in 1929, the top 1% of the population brought in, I hesitate to use the word earn, but brought in or raked in 20% of the total income in the United States. That precipitated the crash that led to the first Great Depression. During the first Great Depression and during World War II, that percentage fell and continued to fall in the immediate post-war period to a low of about 8%. And then in the mid-1970s, it turned around again and began to rise such that by 2007, they were back up to 20%.
And but David,
a little bit.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, just to finish up that thought, it declined a little bit in 2009 because of the crash of the stock market. And then what is perhaps most disturbing about their numbers, as if what I said before wasn't disturbing enough, is that we're back to the same trend that we were in prior to 2007. Inequality is rising again, such that if you just look at the what others are calling the recovery, the period from 2009 to 2012, top 1% incomes grew by over 30%. The bottom 90%, 99% incomes barely grew, to be exact, 0.4%. 0.4 to 32, that's why we're back on this trend of growing inequality.
But it would seem to me that that the economic realities are caused by the political capture by the 1%. Because if it's the as has happened, the hardworking middle class and working Americans, they were the ones, the taxpayers were the ones that bailed out Wall Street, made them whole, and now they're better off than ever, and the income divide is increasing and accelerating, as you've just pointed out. There are political reasons why we tax gamblers in the stock exchange at lower rates than working Americans do, as their paycheck is cut, and you know the payroll tax cut was taken out as a deficit reducing method. So the average worker is getting less now, while Wall Street makes more.
Right. So they're being squeezed on both sides. They're being squeezed by stagnant incomes, and they're being squeezed because the tax burden is increasingly being transferred from those who can but prefer not to pay to those who really can't pay anymore. I tend to think about it as a combination of economic capture and political capture. The fact that our economy is organized in such a way that a very, very tiny group at the top gets to walk away with the lion's share of what is produced gives them a certain amount of power that they can then use in the political sphere, which in turn supports their economic capture. So it's a combination of economic capture and political capture. And that's what we need to be worrying about here in this, what some are calling the new Gilded Age, others are calling the winner-take-all economy.
And again, I'm speaking with David Ruscio, who's a professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. His books include Postmodern Moments in Modern Economics, Rethinking Planning, Development, Globalization, Essays in Marxian Class Analysis, and his forthcoming book is Mind the Gap. His occasional links and commentary available at anticap.wordpress.com. So in terms of the apologists for this growing income inequality in the United States, it comes down to this notion that winners and losers are inevitable and that inequality is a necessary product of a capitalist economy. What's your response to that?
Well, that's the latest. So as I see it, having read the literature and watched the media over the course of the last 5 years or so, there were kind of two moments. In the first moment was a denial that inequality existed at all. And then, of course, given what we know, there was no way of maintaining that position. So having acknowledged that inequality exists, the second argument, the one I see being trotted out these days, is that inequalities are inevitable, and that they are justified, that's how capitalism needs to work. And really, it's not all that bad, since those at the bottom are just fine. I find both of those arguments ludicrous. First, since I'm an economist and I deal in these facts, The facts just couldn't sustain the first silly argument, that inequality didn't exist. Now we have to deal with the second argument that's being proffered, which is that while inequalities exist, they're inevitable and they're okay. It's a kind of just desserts argument. It's hard to maintain that. There is no particular reason. The one that often gets used amongst mainstream economists is that people on the top have more education, more skills, and they basically deserve what they're getting. You cited Joe Stiglitz, who was one of the mainstream economists who has found that argument basically silly. And if you look then, not at the top 10%, because they all have college educations, but at the top 1% versus everybody else in the top 10%, or even higher, the top 0.1%, or if you want to look even smaller, the top 0.01%, they all have the same level of education. They all have the same skills, and yet those at the very top are the ones who are walking off with the lion's share. So the argument that they deserve what they are getting is impossible to sustain. We have a problem. And those who either deny that inequality exists or who attempt to justify inequality just don't want us to face up to the problem and the kinds of solutions we need to adopt in order to eliminate, is to say, what are these obscene levels of inequality.
But my understanding is that the problem is the growing financialization of the economy, that we have increasingly a capitalist system that's about extracting wealth, not creating wealth. At least the robber barons created wealth. And you can look at the price of gasoline at the moment. It went up because of a fear of a strike against Syria that's gone away. But the price of gas I just filled up today, it's gone way up. So, that's gaming. So these parasites on Wall Street are making us all pay more for the food on the table and the gas in the tank for no productive social end except to make themselves wealthy at the expense of working and middle-class Americans.
There's no doubt about that, Ian. But I just want to differ a little bit from the way you're putting it, only because if we look at the rest of the economy, the same is taking place. When productivity continues to rise and wages are stagnant, that means that corporate profits are rising, as in fact they have been. And as those corporate profits rise, so the stock market does, and therefore those who can manage to capture a portion of the corporate profits and the gains in the stock market, who are capturing, as it turns out, all of those gains, in a very tiny minority at the top, inside and outside the financial sector, then we've got a problem on our hands.
Well,
and those economic institutions, as I say, both on Wall Street and on Main Street, are failing us.
Well, let me just close on Joe Stiglitz, the Nobel laureate's speech to the AFL-CIO. He said 165 years ago, Abraham Lincoln said, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." We have become a house divided against itself, divided between the 99% and the 1%, between the workers and those who would exploit them. I thank you for joining us, David Ruscio.
Thank you very much, Ian. I enjoyed it.
Again, I've been speaking with David Ruscio, who is a professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. His books include Postmodern Moments in Modern Economics, Rethinking Planning, Development, Globalization, Essays in Marxian Class Analysis, and his forthcoming book is Mind the Gap. His occasional links and commentary are available at anticap.wordpress.com. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. One time.